from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Judy Campbell, and today for Michael Krasny. Carla Fernandez lost her father to brain cancer when she was in college. Then she met Lennon Flowers, whose mother had died from lung cancer. Together, the two women formed The Dinner Party, which brings strangers together to share meals and find comfort in the shared experience of loss. Did you lose someone you were close to, like a parent or sibling, at a relatively young age? We invite you to share your story and to tell us how the death affected you. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, in today for Michael Krasny. 3 years ago, a group of five young women got together for dinner on the back deck in Los Angeles. They all had one very important thing in common. They'd all experienced the untimely death of a parent or sibling or someone they really loved. They were mostly strangers to each other, but they found they could talk easily and deeply with each other in a way they often couldn't with people who didn't share their experience. They talked about their grief and their loss, but as those dinners developed into monthly events, they found they talked more about their decisions and relationships and how their experience with the death of someone close to them colored their lives. Two of the women at that dinner, Lennon Flowers and Carla Fernandez, who both lost a parent when they were 21 years old, went on to launch what they call The Dinner Party, an informal potluck which brings together people with shared experience of loss to get together to share stories and perspectives. These dinner parties, hosted by participants in apartments, houses, parks, are now regular events in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New York, and San Francisco. Lennon Flowers and Carla Fernandez join us to talk about losing a parent or someone close to you at a formative age and how it shapes you. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for joining. Carla Fernandez, start us off with your personal story. You were a senior at NYU when you got news about your father.
Exactly. It was actually at Thanksgiving dinner my senior year where my family came together, as we often do. And my dad told us that he'd been having these weird sensations and was getting them checked out. And that quickly became a diagnosis for a kind of cancer called glioblastoma multiforme, which is brain cancer and normal person speak, and it's the kind of cancer that Ted Kennedy had. What was significant about this dinner was, you know, our family food has always been really central to how we come together. Those are the moments where we tell stories to each other. Those are the moments where we share what's going on in our lives, where we connect. As dispersed as we were around the country, dinners were a really core place for us to come together. And that was a big pivot point in our family when we found out that my dad had cancer. And about a year later, he passed away.
And your family was in California and you were in New York.
Exactly.
What did you do?
So I did my darndest and finished my senior year of college and then moved in with my dad here in San Francisco. He was receiving treatment at UCSF and spent the next 6 months with him as he was moving on out, as he was dying on hospice care, and came out of that experience having learned so much about death, you know, and about the dying process, and realized how little I knew about that, how little we talked about it, how ill-prepared so many people are to kind of move through that, and also about grief, what it feels like after someone really pivotal in your life passes away and is no longer there to give you the support or whatever it is they provided in your life.
Well, and this happened to you in a very transitional period in your life when you were kind of, you're in a position where you're sort of removing yourself from your parents and living more independently, but also still pretty dependent on parents.
Absolutely. And I think what was interesting about that time was most of my friends were, you know, talking about their first jobs out of college or their new relationships and couldn't really relate to me and my experience because they weren't staying at home with a sick father, which is really what created this hunger in me to find other people who could relate to me on that level.
Well, talk more about that. I mean, when you would go into social situations, 21 years old, you had a desire to talk about your father. And how would that go?
I mean, it's, I know, a great way to kind of have a record screech moment at a party. I remember being, I moved to LA shortly after my dad passed away and was trying to make new friends. You know, we live in this really mobile, transitory time where people aren't living in the towns where their support structures are. And I was living in a place where no one did know my dad or didn't know that part of my story. And here it was right under the skin. It was this big experience, this big rite of passage I had just been through. And, you know, it wasn't something that was coming up at the water cooler at work. It wasn't something that was coming up at happy hour with my coworkers. And it was actually Lennon and I worked together at the time, and we had sat elbow to elbow in a startup for 3 months, worked on these intense projects together. And it took us months until we finally realized that we had both recently lost a parent to the same disease. We were walking back from coffee one day and finally kind of connected those dots. But before we could really get into it and talk about the real effect it was having on our lives, we were back in the office, you know, back to kind of the niceties of day-to-day life. And I think in that moment, we knew that there was a big conversation that we wanted to have, and we wanted to create a space where we could do that and not be rushed and not have to sort of settle back to niceties.
And that's when you got several people together with a similar experience?
Yeah, exactly.
And I have heard that that for people who share this kind of intense experience, it is a real connection and that you really recognize each other.
Absolutely.
Right. Lennon Flowers, tell us your story. It was your mother that died.
Yes, it was my mom. She was diagnosed with lung cancer, which began as a cough and originally a diagnosis of pneumonia, and then was found to be stage 4 lung cancer my senior year of high school. My brother was a freshman in high school at the time, and, you know, that was kind of the single biggest turning point in my life. I was a theater kid and getting ready to go off to college, either to Northwestern or NYU, and suddenly everything changed, and I ended up going to school 20 minutes down the road. And for the next 4 years, you know, my story was largely defined as kind of the cancer years, you know, and it was my brother and I didn't know it at the time, but she was given a year-long diagnosis. You know, and stage 4 lung cancer is, you know, one of the single worst things that I think a family can hear. And my mom was this fiercely independent, very significant lover of real talk, and wanted to be very open about the experience with my brother and I and with our whole family. And, you know, wanted to make sure that this was out in the open and that we had the chance to talk about, you know, loss before it happens. And so I think that there was a lot, you know, within that story that, you know, then led to anticipatory grief, you know, and became, again, kind of defining throughout my college years in many ways. And in some ways, I had it lucky because I also had the ability to escape into this college community. I filled every one of my hours with student committees and starting organizations and play practices and anything that I basically could to, you know, find that source of distraction. And then she passed away my senior year of college.
And did you manage to keep that level of distraction up? What was your experience when she died?
Yeah, it was actually interesting. You know, in the immediate aftermath of her passing, I did manage to keep that same kind of level of activity going. And it was really such an incredibly important survival tool for me at the time. I remember she passed away on a Thursday. On a Saturday, I had our first read-through for a play that we were doing, Midsummer Night's Dream, and I was Puck. And for the next 3 months, no one within that cast ever heard that part of my story. And that was, you know, at the time, a real balm for me because it was a space where you could go and be without a label, you know, and nobody knew that side of my story. And there was no kind of projection or expectation or, you know, threat of bringing down a conversation, as Carla said, and being kind of the immediate party killer. But it was also an incredibly, you know, I'm incredibly grateful now for the community that was around me because I went to school 20 minutes down the road from the place that I had grown up. A lot of my friends from high school and, you know, college community were people that were already familiar with my story. And so they didn't need that kind of source of explanation. So it was only afterwards that I realized, you know, just how incredibly important that had been of having people that were there, you know, both in moments of crisis, you know, in the incredible kind of firefighters, but also the building and the, you know, rehabilitation team. And so really, for me, I think a lot of, you know, the typical effects that you find it following a loss, and you know that feeling of kind of complete and total unmooring that really happened for me probably about a year after my mom had actually died, when I was on into my first job post-college and away from that kind of community and this real cocoon that had been very, very nurturing.
You had been used to sharing your story with people and people knowing who you were and processing your grief, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I was accustomed to people knowing the story without my having to really talk about it at length, and, you know, being available when, you know, to drive me to Duke Hospital if I needed to go on a short, on a moment's notice. You know, there were people to kind of call, and suddenly that sense of community and familiarity was gone.
And you mentioned being around people who didn't put the label on you. Carla Fernandez, can you talk about that? This is something I think both of you have talked about before, is this idea that you're the person with a mother who died or a person mm-hmm. with a father who died, mm-hmm. and that affects how people look at you, how people relate to you?
I think that it's interesting to think about that, because at the end of the day, when I experience that feeling of I don't quite know how to approach this topic that I can tell is important to you, it came down to this discomfort we have about talking about loss. It came down to people not quite knowing how to initiate a conversation, wanting to, but not knowing where to start. What do you say? And I think that one of the core things that brought that initial dinner party table together was through our experience with loss, the findings, the emotions, the learnings weren't just, it wasn't just about being sad. It wasn't just about being devastated. It wasn't just about, you know, this idea of mental anguish, which is how you define the word grief. It was really about, through death, we learned a lot about life. We learned a lot about ourselves. We learned about values and relationships and what was really important. And it was important to be able to have that conversation, to unpack that. And it oftentimes started with, my dad died, and here are all the things that I learned, but in so many conversations, we couldn't get past that my dad died. So all of those learnings kind of stayed locked up or stayed under the carpet.
Well, talk a little more about those learnings. We just heard Lennon Flowers talk about kind of realizing how the death of her mother, you threw yourself into activities. Mm. It kind of defined who you were to become. What did you learn about yourself, how you were affected when you looked in retrospect, how you were affected by the death?
You know, I think that I think a main learning for me was the idea that I was given so many books about grief and kind of handed ideas and traditions of this is how you might want to move through it. This is how you might want to approach it. And what I've learned is that there is no one way, that there is no kind of one size fits all solution to living after loss. And what I learned was, how do I access what works best for me? You know, it might be going to grief support. It might be going out dancing. It might be spending time with a certain group of friends. But it was really, an article recently came out in The New Yorker that talks about going through grief as, you know, there is no one way to do it. You really become your own map maker. So I think there's something about living through that experience where you have to learn to draw your own map. You have to learn how to figure out what are the places. How do you self-soothe? How do you parent yourself? What gives you comfort?
And are these ideas that you share at these dinner parties, that people come up with different tips, different ideas, different experiences?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we absolutely avoid is actually advice giving. And I think it's because of that, you know, basic fact that no two stories are ever the same. No two stories within a family are the same, because no two relationships are ever the same. But at the same time, there's a lot that we can learn from one another's examples. And the fact that, you know, I think that there's power first and foremost in simply discovering that you're not alone and having that moment of recognition of, oh, thank God, you too. And then in seeing people at different stages throughout the grieving process and beyond the grieving process, just, you know, discovering what a new kind of normal looks like, and seeing those kind of milestones for your friends and people around a table can inspire you, you know, with a new set of tools for how you create your own milestones.
So tell us what the dinner party is. How do people find out about it? What happens when you walk into the room? Carla Fernandez.
So each dinner is a little bit different because there is no set routine. There's no agenda. It's a potluck. I think it's really important for people to be able to come in, bring a dish, and share a part of their story through the food that they're making, the recipes that they're sharing. Even if it's, you might make a beautiful lasagna, you might bring a six-pack of tecate. It's really anything goes.
And sometimes share a food that's important to the person you lost.
Exactly.
That's a big part. Go ahead.
Often people are bringing in dishes that are relevant to their stories and relevant to the people who they lost. And we set a few kind of general guidelines of everything is confidential. No two stories are the same. But for the most part, it's just, it feels like a dinner party with friends. It's sitting down and sharing stories and connecting stories. And some of it is about tips and tricks. And I think what's beautiful is we talk about our experience with loss, but there's been dinners where we just talk about our relationships. We just talk about our work, our dreams, our aspirations. And because there's a common ground of having come from experiencing loss, it connects people in that way. Dinners are happening now in Los Angeles and San Francisco, Baltimore. You can go to our website, thedinnerparty.org, and email us to find if there's one happening in your area. And I think the main point, the bottom line of this is that anyone can host a dinner. Anyone can bring people together and initiate a conversation, have a candid conversation about loss. You know, you don't have to wait on us. So we're happy to train you and teach you how to do that.
Now, how is the dinner party different than going to a support group? There are often grief support groups. Have you attended these and with Lennon Flowers?
Yeah. So, you know, and this certainly isn't, we don't see this as a replacement by any stretch of the imagination. You know, again, it's kind of finding whatever it is that feeds you. And so, you know, we have people who go to both, and we have people for whom the kind of idea of a grief group, a support group, was never something that necessarily appealed to them, in part, you know, because I think oftentimes we find that our language and our vocabulary, even around grieving, you know, leaves a lot missing, you know, because it seems to, you know, and I think that there's been plenty of, you know, plenty written and talked about the fact that, you know, there is no kind of linear stage and process for what the grieving experience is, you know, and that's kind of one of the biggest myths out there. Yet at the same time, even beyond the period of kind of immediate mourning and crisis, there's the rest of your life to adjust to. And so those that don't necessarily self-identify as grieving in the present sense, and yet for whom this is an absolutely critical part of their stories, and they want a space to share that and air it and to have the rest of their stories known as well, that's kind of what we're creating here. And I think that there's real power in bringing together a community and a group of friends who know every side of each other's stories and can celebrate, you know, victories and wins and be that, you know, family, that, you know, group of people. Again, there's no way to replace the person that's gone. But when we fill a table with many, many more seats and people who can be there as that source of celebration, you know, when your normal champion is absent, that there's real power in kind of propelling each other forward.
Does it take a certain distance to get to this point where you want to go to a dinner party where you can talk sort of in a casual, social way? When do people usually come?
It's really individual. We've had people who've experienced loss 6 months before. We have people who experienced loss 16 years before. You know, I think that there's a certain level of composure. You are chatting with people around a table, but everyone's experience is different.
And you both are in your 20s. Do you think there's a different way that the generations grieve? Is maybe sitting around a church basement and fold up chairs support group work better for other generations?
It's interesting because, you know, I've been spending time with my grandfather who lost his son when I lost my father. And the really important piece to him and his experience with grief was having my dad buried and having a headstone put in the cemetery. And until that happened, he couldn't have a sense of resolve. And I can go and visit my dad's gravesite, but don't have that intense of an emotional connection with that space. So here I'm seeing that cultural traditions, religious practices, things that really worked for people like my grandfather, don't hold me in the same way, don't provide me with the same sort of sense of forward motion. So I think we are having to kind of make up our own practices, rituals, as our culture is evolving.
And what have you heard? I'm sure you've heard a lot of stories of these rituals, of the ways people try to move forward or cope with their grief. What are some of the stories you've heard from people
One of my favorite stories.
Carla Fernandez, yes.
One of our original dinner party participants in Los Angeles lost her mom really tragically in a car accident when she was also in college and headed home and ended up staying home in Los Angeles. And she was having this experience where her dad and brother were both turning to alcohol to kind of self-soothe and heal, and was left in a house with a lot of empty bottles. And what she ended up doing was taking those bottles and going into her backyard and building a bottle house. And it ended up being a sanctuary for her, a place where she could go and where she could write and where she ended up picking up sewing, which was something that her mom and her had done as she was growing up. And fast forward about 5 years later, she now has a really successful clothing line run out of Los Angeles, and it's really blossomed into her path. You know, she really found her craft and her love in that house that she constructed in her backyard. So stories like that show us there is no one way. And half of the journey is figuring out what feeds you, what makes you feel alive, what makes you feel like you're moving forward. And dinners are all about those kinds of discoveries.
I saw on your website you have people talking about skydiving, mm-hmm. Various Lennon flowers, ways people have tried to move forward that inspired you?
Yeah, absolutely. One friend whose father was an artist and a painter, she and her family ended up pulling all of his work together. He was a very private individual, which is, my mom was a photographer and similarly very introverted. So there were lots of pieces of art and, from her work and collection that I didn't discover until after she had passed away. And the same was true in this particular case. So they gathered all of those paintings together and they brought out all of his friends and their community. And I think that one of the hard things, we often, I think people struggle around talking about loss and the person that's gone, with fear of, oh, I don't want to remind you, or I don't want to bring you down, or I don't know what it is. I don't know the appropriate thing to say. And I think the reality is that you haven't forgotten and you don't need a reminder. But somehow in bringing people together who do remember the fact that these individuals lived and that their, impact and imprint is still very much present, not only in your own life, but across a community, it can be an incredibly powerful and fueling thing.
Well, and any message for the you talked about these conversations being uncomfortable and drawing something to a halt. Any tips for people kind of talking to someone in that situation?
Yeah. One of the things that personally, speaking for myself, that feels like moves that conversation forward is when people ask me about my dad. When they ask me, who was this person? Not just kind of that, I'm so sorry for your loss, deer in the headlights look, but then let me share with you some of the stories, some of the things I learned from him, like why he was so precious to me and why it's difficult saying goodbye.
Noelle writes, I wish there was this organization in the 1980s when my mom died of lung cancer when I was 21. I found most of my peers did not know how to deal with death and didn't know what to say. Then three friends in college did lose one or both parents, and I was there to support them like no one else was equipped to do. Jocelyn writes, the loss of my brother at age 24 took me to my knees. John died in 2006 while hiking in the mountains of Idaho and was missing for a year. We found his remains in 2007. I now live in Idaho, relocated from Davis, California, and I feel closer to him here, and this has helped me to heal. Mm-hmm. My friends who get it have been my saving grace, and my husband Doug, who's lifted me up and helped me along the path of grief for what seems like a lifetime, but also just a blink of an eye. I miss him daily. I will join you all at a dinner party. Send me an invite. And a reminder that if you do want more information on the dinner party, you can find a link on our website, kqed.org. And we'll continue our conversation about the experience and impact of losing a parent or loved one at a relatively young age after a short break. Our guests are Carla Fernandez and Lennon Flowers, co-founders of The Dinner Party, which brings strangers together over potluck dinners to share the experience of loss. We'd like to hear your experiences with loss. If you'd like to join the discussion, please give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website at kqed.org/forum. I'm Judy Campbell, sitting in for Michael Krasny. You're listening to KQED Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, in for Michael Krasny. We're talking about the experience of losing a parent or loved one at a relatively young age with Carla Fernandez and Lennon Flowers, co-founders of The Dinner Party, which brings people who have lost a parent or loved one together to share comfort and the experience of loss. Oh, we have an email here from Helene who writes, I lost my father in 2008 at the age of 27 to colon cancer, and my mother died last year at the age of 32 to pancreatic cancer. I find that people are often made uncomfortable when hearing about my losses. They react as though I've placed a burden on them, and they struggle to know what to say and how to react. I'd like to find a way to express my loss to others without creating an atmosphere of awkwardness and discomfort. I think it's emblematic of how, as a population, we are fundamentally uncomfortable with openly discussing death, grief, and loss. Lennon Flowers, rings true to you.
Oh, absolutely. I think that that's a theme that we hear all the time. You know, is that feeling of, oh, I'm so sorry for making you uncomfortable with my experience of loss right now. And then you end up, you know, going in and trying to comfort that other person oftentimes, or moving on a conversation very quickly. And you learn as a result of that experience, well, I know now not to do that again. You know, and that, I think, perpetuates this feeling of deer in headlights and the, you know, advances the taboos that we carry around death and dying in this culture. And so I think, you know, first and foremost, that's part of our all of our role. You know, if I could talk to my 21-year-old self, it would be to say, be more open and be okay with those moments of discomfort and having somebody, you know, raise an eyebrow and saying unto them, I know you don't know what to say in this moment, and I don't either, because, you know, there is nothing in this that, you know, it's not a fixable sort of situation. And I think often times what people are looking for is not a solution, and we feel bad when we can't provide them with that kind of instant comfort, you know, and problem solving. And I think, you know, both for those who've lived through loss themselves and those who are supporting or watching friends go through the same, it's simply a matter of being a little bit comfortable with the uncomfortable.
And you are, in the course of The Dinner Party, advice, as you mentioned, you don't give advice. Now, you don't have therapeutic training. The host sort of leads the conversation, just as a host at a dinner party would make sure people are talking. Is that right? But you really make it a point not to counsel.
Exactly. We're not professionals in that sense whatsoever. And, you know, I think we're realizing how important therapy is, how important grief groups can be. It's really about developing your toolkit. What are all the different things that can support you as you move through that experience? And we've had amazing dinners where we compare therapists. Who do you know in San Francisco? I'm looking for someone in LA. It's really about sharing the resources that work rather than providing that counsel.
We have a call from Patrick in Marin. Patrick, please join us.
Hi. When I was 17 years old, I was camping, and a ranger pulled up and said there's an emergency call informing my sister died in a car crash. So I drove home, and there were my parents, and something kind of changed in my mom's eyes. I was getting ready to go to college, and she asked me not to go. So I stayed home and just worked, and we spent an incredible amount of time together. And about 8 months later, she said she had a stomach ache, and she was going to go to the doctor. And I said, okay, I'll see you later. And I walked out the door, and something stopped me. This is 32 years ago, and I'm getting ready to cry on the phone here. Something stopped me in my tracks, and I turned around and went back in. She was standing there just looking at the door. And that was the last time I ever saw her in my house. She had ovarian cancer. They found it that afternoon and wheeled her into surgery, and she died 28 days later. And ever since then, you know, I cried that day, and it was almost a decade before I ever cried again. There was a significant amount of, I backpacked by myself. I spent a lot of time on top of the mountain. Did a lot of psychedelics. I drank a lot of booze. I never cried. And, you know, besides the birth of my son, that moment in the hospital, I looked at her. She was sitting there. She told me she had cancer. And I just looked at her and I said, you're going to be all right, right? She said, well, maybe. And that moment, besides, like I said, the birth of my son, is the clearest, most emotionally charged, vivid memory of my life. You know, and it's just been recently, you know, my son is 6 years old. It's very recently that I found some way to find my own kind of peace. I mean, I've gone through my life. I got a PhD in chemistry. I have a good job. I have a wife. I have a son. But as I got older, I just felt like something was kind of grinding away on my insides constantly, just this little bit of bitterness, sadness. And it's just recently that I actually feel like I'm kind of waking up. And it's 32 years. I mean, it can be brutal. And the thought of what you guys are talking about, being able to sit down with a group of people and not have to feel weird about just talking about this or not talking about it or being able to just, you know, try over my mashed potatoes or whatever, that sounds brilliant.
Is that part of why you stayed silent or for 10 years, you think?
You know, I'm not sure. I've gone to some therapy and some that has helped a lot. There have been progressions in my life that kind of, you know, saved me. The other part, I don't know. When my mom was very sick, the day before she died, she was really, really sick, and it was obvious she was not coming out of the hospital, and she looked really sad, and she looked at me, and I said, "It's okay, Mom, I'm going to be okay." And I think part of that was I made this promise to her that I was going to be okay, and I wasn't okay. I was 18 years old and completely just destroyed. So I don't know. I can't really speak to why that, you know, that 10 years happened. But I do really appreciate that your two guests there and what they're doing. That just sounds brilliant. And even though it's 32 years later, I work up in Marin. I may have to make it down to San Francisco to one of these dinners. It sounds great.
Patrick, or you could host one. Patrick, thanks so much for sharing your experience. And 32 years later, it's a lifelong process. And I imagine there's a change in the way you think about your mother, your father, as you continue to process it.
Oh, certainly. Thank you so much for the call, Patrick,
and Lennon Flowers,
for sharing your story. You know, I think that is the reality, that time does change things. But it's also important to note, and especially when a loss happens at a young age, at a formative time in your life, that leaves a permanent imprint on who you are and who you become. And, you know, your approach to self-medication, some healthier than others, you know, and the way in which you take care of yourself, the way in which you see the world. And that doesn't change 32 years later. So I think that the evolving story about, you know, the rawness around a loss certainly does. But certainly the way in which it impacts you and the fact that it impacts you, that never goes away.
Is there a gender split? And I think a lot of women go to your dinner parties in Los Angeles. Is that right? Are there a lot of men who attend as well?
It's definitely a majority women, but also men who attend regularly.
Do you find a difference in the way that men and women process these issues, Carla Fernandez? Or?
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, there's certain gender stereotypes that you could talk about, but oftentimes, you know, it was conversations with my girlfriends who were really open about their feelings, who were thinking about it, who were, who were just, the time we would spend together as a group of women, it was easy for us to talk about our feelings and our emotions. But what we're finding is that men who come to the table are craving that. There might not be the current kind of cultural moments for them to do it, but as soon as they sit down and there's a group of people opening up their arms saying, "What's going on with you? What's happening in your life?" They're so hungry for that kind of a place. And we joke about creating a dating app someday, because there's also odds are in the favor of some of the gentlemen who are coming.
Shannon joins us from Petaluma. Thanks for calling, Shannon.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I wanted to call this whole program. I just happened to turn on the radio and I'm almost in tears, because 5 years ago, my father died of a malignant brain tumor, and I was working in commercial retail real estate, this big power job in downtown San Francisco. And I totally got catapulted into a new world where I have such a value now on time. It took me 3.5 years after he passed to get the courage. I changed my life to become a holistic natural chef, because I started to look at, why is everybody around us having cancer? Why is there so much crime? Why are people suffering in this way? But more importantly, I'm totally on the path of helping people that are healing from cancer, you know, with their food. Food is medicine, and that whole entire, you know, taking advantage of the terroir, moving from San Francisco to Sonoma so that I could go to school and be closer to, you know, the ground that I believe, you know, is healing. And it's just, it's extraordinary. My family was fortunate enough. We were all able to go through grief therapy. When Dad was still alive, we would sit around the kitchen table and, you know, and talk about our grief in that process. And then I'm the oldest of three girls. So then afterwards, after he passed, it was, you know, all keeping us, making sure that we could be together and feeling vulnerable and open and whatnot. So yeah. I, too, have gone through the therapy, you know, the yeah. therapy part of this and took the leap of courage, you know, and then here I am, like, just starting off as a holistic natural
yeah.
path, trying to figure it out.
Thank you, Shannon. Thanks so much for calling in. And that is something you hear a lot, is that this precipitates people really paying attention to their lives and making really drastic changes, I imagine, for good and bad. Shannon Lennon?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Shannon. And I think that that's absolutely something that we see all the time. You know, this is the experience that you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy. And yet there are, as Carla was saying earlier, you know, a lot of really powerful lessons, you know, around living better, you know, and it's kind of a unique kind of window into the fact that you don't have forever on earth. And so what is it that you're going to do with your time? And I think that a lot of the questions that, you know, come up through the experience of losing someone, particularly to illness or to, you know, mental illness, whatever it happens to be. And as you discover that there's actually a, you know, larger set of kind of root challenges and root causes behind that, whether it relates to food or to loneliness and isolation, we've seen a lot of people actually completely turn their lives around and use this, you know, as a key part of, you know, everything that defines not only their kind of personal development, but that of their profession as well.
And I think that, you know, we see people who kind of have these life changes, and then there's also really subtle changes. You know, it's you're not doing anything wrong if you don't discover or find yourself, discover mm-hmm. who you are after you lose someone you love. It might be as simple as, you know, you're going to spend a little bit more time with your family, or you're going to take better care of your body. You know, there doesn't have to be some kind of big life change after this. It can impact you in subtle ways.
But of course, all the changes are not always positive, right? Yeah. I mean, it is very easy, especially you're talking about people in college like you were, it can be very hard to find support or to yeah. know you become rudderless, and people drop out of college a lot.
Yeah. And we recently, an anecdote from our table, one of our participants has been struggling with some mental health issues very much related and triggered by the loss of her father. And it was at a table last week that a group of us got together and tried to come up with a plan of how do we best support this person? You know, whose couch is she going to sleep on? Who's going to be taking her out to brunch on Sunday morning? And it's amazing to now have this group that understands where people are coming from. So when they're I mean, there is darkness that you go through and it's not all rainbows and sunshine by any means, but having a community that you can lean on really helps when you're moving through the tough bits of it.
Karuna from Sonoma, please join us.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for this show and for what we are doing. And I hope to get to a dinner party soon. My story is that about 25 years ago, I lost a husband to AIDS when I was living in Chicago. And at the time, my peers, the folks around me, and even my family just did not really understand and could not support me. And it was excruciating. And of course, at the time, there was not a lot of support for spouses who were losing their partners to AIDS.
You know, Karuna, I'm so sorry. Your phone is breaking up. I understand, and I'm so sorry to have to lose your comments. But she's a woman who, when her husband died of AIDS, it was hard to connect in Chicago and moved to San Francisco, and found that was a place that she couldn't connect to people about grief. It's similar to your dinner party, finding a community of people who share your experience.
Yeah. I think that we know we are living in an age where people are mobile, they're moving, they're transitory, and to be able to be in a new place but quickly connect with people who share your experience is important thing.
And I think, you know, when we first started out, actually, our very first table was just a group of women who'd all lost a parent. And that was, you know, and for a while, even as friends and friends of friends heard of this and were interested in getting involved and starting new tables in different cities, you know, for a while we were a little bit hesitant to expand anything beyond parent loss, simply because, you know, our expertise is purely not born of a clinical degree, but out of our own experiences. And I think what we've found is that there's actually a lot of power, you know, in similarities and kind of commonality, but also difference that we can learn from in different forms of loss, you know. And so I think that there's power in discovering other partners, you know, with a shared experience, but also anyone who's, you know, living through and after.
Lee writes, lost both of my parents within 6 months while in my 30s. Recently discovered a wonderful book by a guy who lost his mother at the same age. Please Talk About Me When I'm Gone by Sean Murphy. More than just a memoir written from different points of view. His mom is dead, sometimes his son in first person, sometimes third. Very moving. Here's what's on the back cover, which captures it. Question, how do you get over it? Answer, you don't. You don't want to. It makes you who you are. Thanks for the great show. Heather writes, my dad died from brain cancer when I was 23. When friends today have parents fighting cancer, I worry about sharing my story because it has the bad ending. Any thoughts?
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a great question.
Flowers.
You know, I think, and we actually hear this a lot of times because, you know, I think we oftentimes jump immediately to comparisons, right? You know, and, oh, you've experienced loss. Well, I lost my cat, you know, or I lost my parent as well. You know, and I think that obviously the kind of closer to, you know, the closer that those two experiences are, the more powerful and resonant, you know, sharing it can be. But I think that sometimes there's power simply in just opening space for somebody to tell their own story. And you don't have to leap immediately to, well, I know exactly what that feels like, because chances are, again, because every two stories are very different. So you might not. But just carving a space where people can air where they are.
Good advice. Susan joins us from Berkeley. Hi, Susan. Susan?
Hi. I was in college when my father got cancer and I was away from home. And my mother wasn't honest with me about what's going on. So I got no help from the college people. They didn't seem to understand the problem. But I had a friend who had lost her father. And she was the one who advised me to call my parents' friends and get the truth from them. And that really helped me a whole lot. The other thing I wanted to say was that when my mother died, that one thing that helped me was writing poetry about it. I'd never written poetry before or since. But organizing your emotions is a very helpful thing to do.
Carla,
the poetry helped me organize my emotions.
Right. Carla Fernandez is shaking her head. Yes. Yeah. Is this something you've experienced?
I have like stacks and stacks of journals at home from Susan doing exactly what you're saying. And I think that we've experimented a little bit with writing workshops. You know, how can we come together in a way that's about breaking bread, but maybe not just talking, maybe writing, sharing things that we've written or created together. And Susan, I think that's great that that's something that you discovered that was helpful for you. And thanks for sharing that.
I have an email from Julia who asks, I'm a stage 4 cancer patient and and a mother of a 4-year-old child. I can tell you, I'm also the mother of a 4-year-old child, so excuse me choking up. I can tell you that the single most difficult thing about contemplating death is the effect it will have on my son. I would like to ask your guests if there was anything your parents could have done to make the process of grieving easier, or conversely, if there is something they did that made it particularly difficult. Carla? Fernandez.
Yeah, and Lennon, you might want to add to this, but you know, it was the days that I got to spend with my dad asking him the questions I wanted to ask him that I am so grateful for. You know, questions about what was it like for him to be marching towards his own death, you know, and then what was it like when he was 21 years old and was trying to figure out what to do with his life? Like having the time and the space to just suck up all the information I could from him was so precious.
Any thoughts, Lennon Flowers?
Yeah, and I can say one thing that I long for and wish that there was more of from my mom is her writing and her voice. Mm-hmm. You know, the other night we were hosting a dinner for a number of new hosts in Los Angeles, and we were cooking recipes that were part of the family repertoire, and I came across a little index card with her writing on it, you know, and it was a recipe for a corn pudding that I absolutely don't remember at all ever eating. But there was such power in the fact that she had touched that card and that kind of those ties to a real person. And so I wish I had more letters and, you know, also recordings.
Yeah, videos and voice recordings about maybe her life and kind of describing who she is and how she grew up. Go ahead.
I have to piggyback on what Lennon was saying. If my house was burning down, there's one thing that I would grab and run. And it's a letter that my dad wrote me when I was 16 before cancer, before there was any kind of thought that he might die before he was at a ripe old age, and it's like it's advice. It's, you know, these are the things I see in you, and these are the things to look out for, and it's really about him believing in me. You know, as any parent believes in their child, and I turn back to that annually, and I read it again, and I kind of buckle my seatbelt, and I move into another year. So, being able to kind of capture on paper or on video or however you do want to express yourself and put that in a safe place, I think is really, really invaluable.
And finally, I would say to leave behind the knowledge that you will be all right. That was the thing that I'm most grateful for, that, you know, my mom drilled into my brother and I in the course of those 4 years, is that, you know, we had everything that we would need to move through life without her when she was gone. And I think that that's it. You know, there will come a time in which, you know, there isn't somebody to call on the other line to seek advice from. But I think that knowledge that you've got all you need is one of the single biggest gifts that you can give.
Michael writes, my father died when I was 17 and my mother at 20. This was in 1967 and 1970. I still suffer from this loss in my life. Never really had help with it. I will look for a dinner to attend and share what I know and what I don't know. You're listening to Forum. We are talking with Lennon Flowers and Carla Fernandez, co-founders of The Dinner Party, which brings strangers together over potluck dinners to share their experiences of loss. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Judy Campbell. And let's go to a caller. Bala Chi is joining us from San Jose. Hi.
Hi. Really a great show and a very emotional show that you have conducted today. And basically, this incident happened in India. I'm from India, originally, and my father died. I mean, my father had a kidney failure at the age of 52. And we were two brothers. I was around 25 or so, and then my younger brother was 22 years. So doctor said one of you has to donate the kidney. I mean, we were agreeing to donate the kidney, and my younger brother's kidney was matching more than mine. So then he went ahead and gave the kidney. But the big tragedy part was after transplanting the kidney, my father only survived for a week. So in that process, my mother, who went into shock because she lost her husband.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for calling, Alachi. We also, Carla Fernandez, did you have something you wanted to add?
And Lennon might want to add to this, but I think what's so important about what Balachi is bringing up is, you know, one person in your life might pass away, and that's a loss in and of itself, but oftentimes your world is rearranging around you. The other people in your life are also going through their own experience with loss. So it's not just this kind of isolated thing, but someone's mother, someone's wife, someone's children are also kind of readjusting around this new absence. And I think a lot of what dinners end up being about is, how do I navigate this shifting landscape? How do I support my family? How do I exist in this space? Because everything suddenly is a little bit different.
Jim from Davis asks, I lost my mom at 16, my father at 21, and last year my wife of 22 years. I'm 59. Your site mentions your group of 20 to 30-somethings. Is your group open to people of other ages as well?
Yeah. So again, the reason that we kind of started with 20 and 30 somethings was because we wanted to stick to the territory that we knew. And to begin with, we imagined that this was most valuable for people in that kind of transitory, transitional period of life, you know, before they'd started families of their own. Since then, we realized that there is no actual line in the sand, you know, between when a dinner is relevant and powerful and when it's not. So we're absolutely bringing together peer groups. I do think that there's power in hearing from other people and sharing your story with people who are in a similar kind of phase of life to you. But then there's an aspect of this that, you know, certainly loss and life after is intergenerational, and we're inviting that conversation as well.
And it sounds like you just encourage people to set up their own dinner parties.
Exactly.
And have people from their own groups join. So let's hear now from Sarah from West Marin. Hi, Sarah.
Oh, hi, my name is Sarah, and I'm calling because my loss was a little bit different than what you're discussing, although similar. I had a long-term partner for 7.5 years, and he had a psychotic break and committed suicide. And I really, really lucked out in that a friend from New York referred to me here on the West Coast, a great counselor in San Francisco. And he's very much an angel fallen from heaven. His name is Patrick Arbour. He's the director of elderly suicide prevention at the Institute on Aging, and he's responsible for grief-related services there. But really, Patrick is a phenomenal counselor, and I really honestly would say that he saved my life. Mm-hmm. He does an 8-week course that I was in with 3 other women, and each of us had experienced suicide in our families, and I'm shaking just thinking about how deep we all went and how very necessary it was for me to be with Patrick and just see him, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks for a number of years. Mm. And just have a fantastic person to lean on who, through the sort of what you would, you know how it is when you have lost, you're sort of in this strange gray area.
Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah. And thank you so much for sharing. I think that, you know, one of the things that comes up frequently is, you know, everybody immediately goes to the section in the library on grief and finds it lacking, you know, and what they're looking for, you know, hasn't been written or written in the way that they're looking for it. And so I think that, you know, part of this and the opportunity that, you know, we're trying to do is to simply share what works, you know, and from people who've experienced it. So thank you for sharing the story.
And again, say your website. We also have it on our page, kqed.org.
Yeah, so you can find out more at www.thedinnerparty.org. And we're pulling together tools and resources to help anybody anywhere host a dinner with friends and others with a shared experience.
And thank you both for joining. We were speaking with Lennon Flowers and Carla Fernandez, co-founders of The Dinner Party. Thank you for sharing your experiences, and thanks to everyone who called and wrote in to share theirs. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editors, Dan Zoll. Interns are Jack Detch, Marisa Endicott, Miriam Jamil, Hannah Rose Levy, Danielle Radin, and I'm Judy Campbell, and for Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.